Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, life is a road, and you're a lucky person if you get to walk some of that road with a sister. I mean, brothers are great. I've got four of them. Brothers, you're great. But boy, if you got a sister, you got someone who helps you see things in a different way, really, than anyone else can, who has your back in a way that no one else quite can. And while there's a lot in our first story that will make you think of having a brother, it's a story that's really about what it's like to have a sister. Here's playwright and storyteller Kevin Kling, recorded live in the Appleseed studio with a story called Walking to School with My Sister.
It's great being back here. One of the things that most people do when they come to a new state or country, they say how they say hello in their country. So I'm going to teach you how we say hello in Minnesota, our greeting to each other, so that when you're there, you'll know what to do. And so I want everybody, full voice, let's say, hey.
Hey.
Very good. Now cut that volume in half. Hey.
Hey.
Right? Now cut that emotion into half. Hey.
Hey.
Perfect. Nice. All right, you may walk among us now. Another thing I want to get going on, get out of the way, is my arms, because you've probably noticed them. Have you noticed they might be different than yours? Have you noticed that? If you didn't, God bless you. But my arms are probably different than yours. They're different than each other. My right or my left arm, I have four fingers on this side, no thumb. And so if you want to high five after this show, you're out of luck, but we can high four all day. And I wear one of these braces. This brace protects my arm. It's what in school you're going to learn is an ectoskeleton. It protects from the outside. And it's great if you've got a brother, Perry Thrust. So that's my left arm. My right arm, I lost the use of that in a motorcycle accident 23 years ago. It hasn't moved since. So if you see it move, you got to tell me after the show. I will get very excited. So I tell right away, because I notice there's young people in the audience, and I know that young people will wonder the whole time about my arms, and I've learned that adults are out there. I wonder if he knows about his arms. And, yeah, so now we're good. Okay, so my arms, and so I want to start because school is coming up, right? Are you all going back to school, or have you started yet?
It's already started. We homeschool.
So. It's already, oh, yeah, well. And do you take a summer break for homeschool?
It's my first year doing it, so okay.
Yeah. Are you the homeschooled?
Yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, school for me, it was exciting going back. For one thing, we had new clothes. We had blue jeans that hadn't learned how to bend yet. They were like cardboard, and your first would be at a crease in the middle, and then they'd slowly work in as the year went on. Our shoes, we had gym shoes, and we got new gym shoes everywhere, every year to wear in the gym. Teachers, we'd get new teachers. You have the same teacher, I'm guessing. Yeah, but that's good. And Miss Keller was one of my first teachers. She was my third grade teacher. She had fiery red hair, and I loved her. And I just found a report card from her that at the bottom it said, Kevin has no understanding of the material, but I'm not worried about him. I loved her. She understood me. And so this first story I want to tell is about school, starting school. My imagination tended to wander when I was a kid, and I tended to follow it. One time when I left school, I followed a song for 3 miles. And when the song stopped, I didn't know where I was. I ended up going in a hospital, and they called my home, and my parents had to come and get me. And it was so embarrassing. So my sister had to walk me home from school. Well, first my brother walked me home from school, but he had to quit because there was an incident. Now, have you ever heard of George Washington? Have you heard of George Washington?
Yeah.
About half, yeah. Okay. George Washington was the first president of the United States, right? Well, what else about George Washington? George Washington couldn't tell a lie. He was physically incapable of telling a lie. Well, my brother didn't suffer from that condition. In fact, my dad used to say lying was his way of releasing carbon dioxide. So my brother was walking me home from school, and he goes, let's go into this convenience store, this little grocery store. And I go, Steve, we're not supposed to go in there. Mom and Dad said we aren't supposed to. He says, no, it's okay. I already checked. I said, I don't think you have, Steve. And he goes, yeah, and besides, I'll buy you an icy. Oh, no, my brother would not lie about an icy. And so I said, okay, let's go in. So we go into the store and we go to the icy machine. Now there's two flavors, right? Blue and red. But I mix them together and make a third flavor. Do you know what that is? What's blue and red? Purple. Brown, you got to add a couple more. If you throw some Coca-Cola in there, you got brown. All right. But blue and red, purple. So I'm going to make my famous purple drink. And I put about half of the blue in there. And then I pour in the red. And I get to the top and I shut the nozzle off, but it doesn't turn off. It won't turn off. The red keeps pouring out and it's pouring over the cup. And I go, Steve, I can't get this thing to turn off. And he goes, go get the clerk. So I go to get the clerk. And by the time we get back, my brother has taken every single soda cup and he filled it up all the way to the top. Then he took all the coffee cups and he filled those up too. And when he was done with that, he started filling up hot dog boats. And when those got awful, he started filling up the little ketchup containers until every container was full of red, of icy. And when he couldn't find anything else to fill up, he started to fill himself up, and he had his mouth under the look, and the clerk saw him, and the clerk said, what are you doing, kid? And my brother starts to explain when he gets the biggest brain freeze in the world. And he goes, my brains, and red's dripping out of the corner of his mouth. Brains, my brains. And the clerk's yelling, police. So that's why my sister walked me home from school. So I'm waiting on the curb. I'm waiting for my sister. When she finally comes running up and grabs, she says, where have you been? I said, I've been waiting right here. And she grabs my hand and starts walking across the crosswalk. Well, she thinks it's my hand, but it's not. It's the hand of another kid she just grabbed by mistake. She gets halfway across the crosswalk, and she looks back, and I'm still on the curb waving to her. And she stops, and the whole crowd keeps going, and she looks and sees she's holding the hand of a boy about her same age. Their eyes meet, and it is awkward. She looks back, and the crossing guard goes, come on, hurry up, you two lovebirds. She goes, I'm not, he's not, it's not, we're not. She drops the kid's hand like it's a burning stick, and she comes running back, and she goes, why did you do that? And I go, I didn't do anything. And then she turns and says, where did he go? Did you see that? My sister changed. In that moment, my sister changed. And you know, I think that's how we all change. It takes our whole lifetimes to do it. But when it happens in an instant. So I'm hoping for you, this next school year, you all have that moment when you change.
That was Kevin Kling with Walking to School with My Sister. You know, I have a sister. In fact, I have three of them. For a long time, though, I only had one. We're 9 years apart, my sister and I. And among all the memories I have of my sister, there's one that's kind of unusual. In that memory, she's just little, about 3 years old. And one day, without anyone noticing, she wandered away from our house and down the road about a mile to the general store on the main street of our little town. Turns out she just wanted some candy. But when the high school kid behind the counter asked my sister where her folks were instead of just giving her some candy, my sister realized she was all alone, and she got kind of freaked out, and she ran out of the store in tears and across the main street in kind of a panic. And that's where we saw her, running across Main Street, sobbing. We'd been looking for her ever since we noticed she'd gone missing. We were in kind of a panic ourselves, and we could hardly believe that she had made it on her own all the way a mile down the road to the store. Well, it's an unusual memory because I'm the only one who has it. None of my siblings remember it. Our parents don't remember it. My sister doesn't remember it. And in light of the complete lack of evidence of the thing actually happening, I think I may have dreamed it. I'm serious about that. It may not have happened at all. But my sister loves that story. In fact, she feels like it's a story that sums up the kind of person she is, heading out on headlong adventures, despite the danger, despite the things that may frighten her. Some of those adventures ending in tears and freaking her out a little, but still going, still going. And that trip to the store may not have happened, but she's adopted it as kind of her archetypal story, like her origin story. And you know, it fits her pretty well. Fresh from college, she bought a one-way ticket to England, not knowing what may befall her there, and made a life in the UK as a musician, and later as an educational professional and a caregiver. She got a master's degree there. She's working now on a proposal for a doctoral program. That adventure is still unfolding. Those things, the doctoral degree, the master's degree, the one-way ticket to the UK, those are all real. They happen in real life. My sister is kind of wild and courageous and totally different from me, and yet inseparably connected to me. She has charged into adventures that, well, that I haven't charged into. And I think about her whenever I feel like I need to do something brave. Have you got a sister? Tell me about her. Better yet, tell her about her. Tell her what you love about her. Tell her what you've learned from her. Maybe she needs to hear it. Anyway, that's where Kevin's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? You know, we've got one more story for you today. This one from storyteller and musician Charlotte Blake Alston. It's an African folktale about a courageous sister who is the only one who can help her brothers prepare for an important coming-of-age ceremony. And while Charlotte Blake Alston is a powerful storyteller to listen to, she's powerful to watch, too. And you can see her tell this story on the video version of this episode on YouTube, Spotify, or at BYURadio.org. Search for the Appleseed, and you'll find us. Here's Charlotte, recorded live in the Appleseed studio with Takane the Brave.
This story comes from the Basotho people of the country of Lesotho. It's a female central character. Some years ago, I spent some time trying to mine stories that had female central characters in them. In a long ago time, in a far away place, there lived three orphaned children. The oldest was named Takane. When her youngest brother inhaled his first breath of life, their mother exhaled her last, closed her eyes, did not wake up again, and joined the ancestors. Their father, who had been the chief of that village, was so weighted down with grief and with sorrow and loss that only 2 months later, he lay down, closed his eyes, did not wake up again, and joined his wife in the land of the ancestors. That left Takane to take care of her brothers. So she was not only their sister, she became their mother and their father. Everything a mother or father would do for their children, Takane did for her brothers. She planted a garden in the back so there would always be something growing that they could eat. She would do chores around the village so she could get money to go to the marketplace and buy additional things that they needed. She would go and draw water from the stream, boil it over a fire so that when they drank it, it did not make them sick. She worked extra hard in her village and other villages besides to earn enough money to buy school uniforms and supplies so her brothers could attend the village school because they could not go without those things. Everything a mother or father would do for their children, Takani did for her brothers. Until the time came when they reached that age when the men of the village take all of the boys away from the village and teach them the ways of men. Yes, they learn to hunt, they learn to fish, but they also learn what it means to be a husband, a father, and to have the well-being of the village in their hands. They stay with the men anywhere from 5 weeks to 5 months, learning the ways of men. The last week, the boys are taken to what are known as loosening huts. And during that week, the mothers go to the marketplace and buy the finest of fabrics and begin to sew clothing for their sons to re-enter the village as men, not the clothing of boys, but the clothing of men. The fathers make shields for their sons to carry with them when they re-enter the village. Takani did the same as the mothers and as the fathers were doing. She worked extra hard every single day, and she earned enough money to buy the finest fabrics in the marketplace and buy the materials she would need to make the shields. And she began to sew her brothers' loosening clothes for them, put them in a large basket with the shield, left her village, walked through the forest, up the mountain trails, came to the place where the loosening huts were, found the one where her brothers were, and tapped on the door. Her oldest brother opened the door. "My brothers," she said, "I have made your loosening clothes and shields for you." The older brother reached into the basket and lifted out the clothes and said, "Takani, we cannot wear these." She says, "What do you mean? I made these with my own hands, just as the other mothers." "Yes, Takani, but we are the sons of a chief. We must re-enter the village, the sons of a chief, men wearing clothing and carrying shields made from the skins of the Nanabolele. None of the terrible creatures who live below the dock. Well, how is anyone to do that?" He said, "If our father was alive, this is what he would do. This is how it must be, Takani." She said, "I have done everything for you since our parents died. I have brought you right to the brink of manhood. It is time for you to do such things for yourself." "That's just it, sister. You have only brought us to the brink of manhood. In order for us to cross that threshold, we must re-enter the village, the sons of a chief, wearing clothing and carrying shields made from the skin of the Nanabolele. This is how it must be, Takani." And he shut the door. Takani took the basket, left the loosening huts, walked back down the mountain trail, through the forest, back to her village. Sat down beside her hut. She picked up a clay pot and a spoon and began to tap on it. And she began to tap louder and louder, and people began to come out of their huts. "They said, Takani, what are you doing?" "My brothers," she said, "they say that the loosening clothes and shields I have made for them are not good enough, that because they are the sons of a chief, they must have clothing and shields made from the skins of the Nanabolele. The terrible creatures who live below the dark waters. Well, how are you to do that? You are just a girl." All they had heard about these creatures were stories that they lived below the dark waters, whatever that meant, and they had skin that shined like all the stars in the sky. Takani said, "I was tapping to see if anyone would be brave enough to go with me, since my brother said this is how it must be." "Oh." Some of them turned their heads down towards the ground and began to take steps back away from Takani. But one woman stepped forward and said, "Takani, if you are brave enough to do this, I will go with you." And one by one, others began to step forward. The women cooked food for them to prepare on their journey to eat, but also to use as an offering to the Nanabolele. They packed them onto two oxen, left the village, and began to walk all through the night. And early in the morning, they came to a broad, broad stream. Could this be the dwelling place of the Nanabolele? Takani took a chunk of meat, tossed it out onto the water, and called out, "Nanabolele, who shines in the night? They say that it is only right for my brothers to become men. They must have shields and clothes made from your shining skin. Nanabolele!" And the water began to bubble and churn, and they prepared to look upon the terrible faces of the creatures. When up above the surface of the water, there appeared a big bullfrog. It looked directly at Takani and spoke. "Go further. Go further." Takani remembered her mother's teachings, that if she should encounter a strange spirit, she should listen with her heart to see if it meant her harm. And if it did not, she could do as it said. She listened with her heart. It meant no harm. So they left that first broad stream and they continued to walk all through the second night. And early in the morning, they came to a second broad stream. Could this be the dwelling place of the Nanabolele? Again, she took a chunk of meat, tossed it out onto the water and called out, Nanabolele, who shines in the night? They say that it is only right for my brothers to become men. They must have shields and clothes made from your shining skin. Nanabolele! And the water began to bubble and churn, and one of the men picked up a spear and prepared to defend against the terrible creatures. When up above the surface of the water, there appeared a bigger bullfrog. And just as the first, it looked directly at Takani and spoke. Go further. Go further. And as with the first, she listened with her heart. It meant her no harm. So they left that second broad stream and began to walk all through the third night. And early in the morning, they came to a wide, wide lake with water so still and so clear. She had to touch it to make sure that it was real. Could this be the dwelling place of the Nanabolele? Takani took part of a chicken, tossed it out onto the water and called out, Nanabolele, who shines in the night? They say that it is only right for my brothers to become men. They must have shields and clothes made from your shining skin. Nanabolele! But the lake water stayed still. She took an entire chicken, tossed it out onto the water, called out again, Nanabolele, who shines in the night? They say that it is only right for my brothers to become men. They must have shields and clothes made from your shining skin. Nanabolele! And the water began to ripple and bubble and churn, and they prepared to look upon the terrible faces of the creatures. When up above the surface of the water, there appeared an old woman. She had a walking stick. She pointed it at Takani and motioned for her to follow. And then she disappeared down below the surface of the water. Takani stepped out onto the clear, still lake and began to descend down, 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 all the way down to the bottom where it was dry. There were huts everywhere, a village. Down below the waters? How could this be? And then she noticed there were huts, but there were no people. Old woman, she said, how is it there can be a village here with no people?
Oh, said the old woman, the Nanabolele, they ate them all, the men, the women, the children, the chicken, the cattle, everything gone, 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 gone.
But what of you, old woman?
Oh, too old and tasteless, I guess. Too tough to chew. They left me alive to take care of them. I heard your words, young woman. You are very brave.
And Takani told the old woman why she had come.
Oh, she said, the only way that you can get the skin of the Nanabolele is to wait until they have eaten and fallen into a deep, deep sleep. Nothing can wake them up. Then you can remove the skin. They will not feel a thing. But right now, I must hide you because they will be coming soon.
And she began to hide Takani and her party and pushed against them mud and reeds and mud and reeds. And when she packed in the last bit of mud, shum, shum, the creatures began to enter the water from above. Shum.
Saint Cook and Kai, I smell people. Oh, said the old woman, it is only the food I have prepared for you. Come eat, 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 eat.
And eat they did noisily and sloppily, and when their bellies were full, as the old woman said, they fell into a deep, deep sleep. The old woman began to remove the reeds and the mud.
Now, she said, you can choose the one that you want.
Takani looked from one to the other. It was just like the stories that she had heard. Their skin was shining like all the stars in the sky. She chose the largest one. She got a knife and began to remove the skin, and as the old woman said, it did not stir. She put the skin into a basket.
Now, said the old woman, you must go quickly, because when they wake up, they will see that you have skinned one of them. They will follow you. Take with you this ironstone pebble. When you see the red dust clouds getting closer, you throw it down. It will begin to grow and protect you. Now go quickly, quickly, quickly.
And they left the old woman all the rest of the food that they had, and they began to ascend higher and higher until they reached the top of the clear, still lake, and it was dark, but they did not wait for light. They began to run and run and run, and early in the morning when the sun was beginning to rise above the mountains, they looked back, and she could see the red dust clouds getting closer. She threw down the pebble, and as the old woman said, it began to grow. When it got to her knees, they got on it. It grew to a mountain just as the Honorable Lele reached it. They ran around and around and jumped and pawed and wore themselves out, trying to get to Takana and her party, and fell into a deep, deep sleep. And as soon as they did, the mountain began to shrink smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until once again it was just an ironstone pebble. And she picked it up, and they continued to run and run and run through the night. And early in the morning, when the sun was beginning to rise above the mountains, again she looked back and she saw the red dust clouds getting closer. Again she threw down the pebble. It began to grow. When it got to her knees, they got on it. It grew to a mountain just as the Honorable Lele reached it. They ran around and around and jumped and pawed and wore themselves out, trying to get to Takani and her party, and fell once again into a deep, deep sleep. And as soon as they did, the mountain began to shrink smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until once again it was just an ironstone pebble. And she picked it up, and they continued to run all through the night. And early in the morning, when the sun was beginning to rise above the mountain, she could see the fires from her village. She could smell the food cooking. She began to shout and shout. The people turned. They saw the red dust clouds. They sent their dogs after the Honorable Lele. They chased them all the way back to the first broad stream, all the way back to the second broad stream, all the way back to the clear, still lake, all the way to the bottom, where the old woman still takes care of them. Takane took the skins to the one person who knew how to sew them into clothes and shields. And when her brothers re-entered the village, the sons of a chief, re-entering as men, wearing clothes and carrying shields made from the skins of the Honorable Lele, the people went down on their knees. That was the last thing Takane's brothers ever asked her to do for them. They built her own hut, gave her 100 head of cattle, and she lived her days in peace and in happiness. And that is how it should be.
That was Charlotte Blake Alston with Takane the Brave. Can you remember a moment when a sister made a positive impact on you? Can you think back to a time when an act of bravery changed things for you? Was there a time when someone made a sacrifice for you? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. You can tag us on social media, or you can send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed@byu.edu. We want to thank Kevin Kling and Charlotte Blake Alston for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories, and now it's time to share some of your own. While you're waiting for the next Appleseed episode, try Kaboom, another BYU Radio podcast. It's filled with audio adventures for everyone in your family to enjoy, wherever you get your podcasts.